Good evening, and welcome to Plan Lehigh Valley, the WDIY program presented along with our partners from the Lehigh Valley Planning Commission. Let's first welcome our co-host, Becky Bradley, who's the Executive Director, and Matt Assad, its Managing Director.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Hello. Our show tonight will take a look at how the Lehigh Valley has changed since the turn of the century. This region's growth is at the heart of everything, but the impact of that growth has dictated development patterns that have evolved in the 24 years since the turn of the century, transforming the region into a very different place than it was just a little more than two decades ago. Our guest for this show is once again Lehigh Valley Planning Commission Environmental Planner Christian Martinez. Christian started at the LVPC in 2022 as a community fellow through Lehigh University. He's now an environmental planner specializing in climate action, open space preservation, and active transportation. In 2023, he worked on the project to perform safety audits at dozens of the region's most troublesome pedestrian corridors, and he's a co-author of the Greater Lehigh Valley Greenhouse Gas Inventory. He's also a gifted statistician who worked with LVPC Geographic Information Systems Planner Mackenzie Geisner to dig into the data showing how this region has changed. Before arriving in the Lehigh Valley, Christian graduated from Iowa State University, where he double majored in environmental science and political science. He holds a master's degree in environmental policy from Lehigh University. Christian, your bio is longer than mine, and I know you're a lot younger than me, so really thrilled to have you on the program.
Thank you for having me once again.
Matt, can you give us an overview of the data project the LVPC did to look at development changes across the region?
Sure. Christian and Mackenzie, they sifted through more than two decades worth of population and development data just to see how things were changing over the past couple of decades. And they looked at what development was happening every year and also where it was happening. And they sort of took this 30,000-foot view of it to see what trends were happening. And what they found was pretty interesting, that they were able to identify two very clear and very different periods of development and how that development has affected our communities. So in my past life, we did a lot of computer-assisted reporting, but really nothing like this. You know, what they were able to do is like magic to me. It just kind of revealed a lot of trends. Pretty cool.
Becky, why did you want to take this look?
Well, I mean, one of the biggest things that we need to understand is where we're growing, how we're growing, why we're growing. So all of those things are important in understanding how our individual communities manage themselves, but how the counties and the region are managed, right? So it helps us figure out where we need to invest in sewer and water and roads and bridges and where our school districts might be seeing increases in the student population. So one of the things that we always do is monitor and measure various factors of development and land preservation across the region.
Becky, I see your data mentions development in exurban areas. That's a term that not everyone has heard. I haven't heard it before. Can you explain what exurban means and how it plays a role here?
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest with you, just a nerdy planner term for where the development, the more dense development has stopped, yet you're starting to see development grow, right? So it's just, in some ways, it's the demarcation line, but it's a little bit more complicated than that. Because what usually happens is you have, you know, like housing developments or commercial developments, and then you think, okay, well, those stop and then the farmland starts. Well, to some extent, that's true, but often what you have is part of that transition is you'll start to see estate homes starting to be built, people buying older farmhouses, those start being taken out of agricultural use and put into residential use. That's the first sign of exurban growth. Then you know when that starts to happen that more development is going to start to push into those areas unless a community decides they don't want to grow in terms of development of land area onto greenfields any longer. So those are very, very important places for us to look at because it allows us to predict where the development pressure is most likely to go. Usually, by the way, when a development goes in, whether it's housing, commercial, industrial, they'll extend sewer and water service to those locations. It's always cheaper to extend sewer and water, to extend from where the pipes end into the newer areas. So you can assume that the development costs are going to be less as things grow from one location to the next property and then the next property. However, that's not always the case. And so part of our work is trying to avoid leapfrog development and to talk to communities about why developments proposed in a leapfrog fashion don't really work. And then they essentially, when that happens, they ensure that you're going to get development in between where you've had a development kind of leapfrog the farmlands or the forests or the green fields north or south or wherever it is of that. And that is where we find problems. And that's where you find stress. You find community stress and community dialogue around, you know, rampant growth or what a lot of people call sprawl. And then, you know, you also find political issues associated with that as well.
Mm-hmm. And now the Lehigh Valley is one of Pennsylvania's more successful regions in terms of population growth and economy. How big of a role does that play in this?
I mean, that's huge, right? So more people, more stuff, right? Like more is always more. It is. I mean, it's fairly logical, right? However, what's really important for our region right now, especially since we've had, you know, over 60 years of sustained population growth, is that we make sure that we're looking for redevelopment opportunities so we can avoid greenfield development to the greatest extent possible and protect that quality of life and those open spaces and all the things that our community prioritizes as the highest priority. It is open space and a healthy economy. Those two things, right? It is a high environmental quality, which ties into the open space, farmland protection, and other things. Every single poll that we have ever done in the Lehigh Valley's history has prioritized those two things. So we want to make sure that we're having logical, not emotional conversations about how we can grow responsibly. And then we need to support our local governments in making the choices to update their laws that reflect the goals of their community. Mm-hmm. And believe it or not, that's usually where the conversation breaks down. Everyone agrees on the goal, but then they get scared to do the work to actually ensure that the goal can be met. And there's a whole host of legal reasons for that. But if we really believe in something, I think we have to have the strength to make the decision. Without a vision, there's no victory, period. And so if we focus on what it's going to take to get to victory and picking off those things, including zoning code amendments that allow us to achieve that, that's where we protect our quality of life and really achieve those goals that we've set out for ourselves. In fear of lawsuit, is the excuse not to do something is exactly that, an excuse. It doesn't move us forward.
Christian, where did you find most of the development happening?
So most of the development in our region right now is happening in our suburban areas. We're seeing that 71% of our non-residential square footage being proposed since 2000 has been in suburban areas, and residential units being proposed follow a very similar trend, with 64% of all of our proposed residential units occurring in suburban areas. Our suburban areas, they have more room for development, and development there it typically can be more affordable for developers. So that's why we're seeing a lot of movement into those areas. And like Becky said, it's important that we work on zoning and subdivision and land development ordinances to make sure that this development aligns with our regional goals.
So earlier, Matt mentioned that there were two very different periods of development since 2000. Can you talk about those two periods?
Sure. So from 2000 to 2010, we saw a lot of suburban development, especially in single family homes, like we saw around the country, really, with the boom in single family home development. And then with the downturn in the housing market from 2010 to about now, we still see a lot of suburban growth, but that growth is much different. It's a lot more dense, and we're seeing an increase in apartments, especially in suburban areas, a 70% increase in this most recent decade and change than it was from 2010 in terms of apartments being proposed. And as well, we're also seeing some urban infill in our cities. We've seen a 35% increase in residential proposals in this most recent decade, and 139% increase in apartments in those areas.
Christian, was there anything in the numbers that surprised you?
So one thing that jumped out to me was that we're seeing fewer overall non-residential land development proposals in this most recent decade or so, but they're at a much larger scale. And looking in the numbers, that's surprising to me. But you know, when you go out in the community and you talk to folks and, you know, just driving around, you've kind of seen it tangibly. We've seen a large increase in square footage in our non-residential, especially in rural areas. We've seen over a 400% increase in the square footage of non-residential developments. So even if there aren't that many developments coming in, it can certainly change the character and the transportation issues in these rural areas, because they're a bit more sensitive to that change because there wasn't as much development going on in the first place.
Matt, how have communities responded to this surge of development that we've been seeing?
They've actually been doing a lot. And I know some of the residents wonder, what are they doing? Why aren't they doing something? They've actually done quite a bit, because we have recommended that they adopt new official maps, that they do make zoning changes and amendments and planning changes. And we have seen a flurry of those. You know, over the past 10 years, we have seen more than 560 changes in ordinances or zoning maps or official maps, mostly in an effort to better control development arriving at their doorsteps. And last year alone, we saw more than 100, and that was the most we had seen in almost two decades. So they are responding. And to do these things, it's not something you can do overnight. It takes a lot of study. It takes a lot of analysis. You can't just, you know, write a couple of clauses into your zoning law. It takes time, and it takes effort, and it takes motivation. And they've been doing it. The other thing that they've been doing is they've been joining multi-municipal plans. We also recommended that. So in Pennsylvania, every community by law has to account for every possible development use. But if you're in a multi-municipal plan, say you're in with 6 or 8 communities, you share that burden. So if, say, you're a farming community in one of these plans, you've changed your zoning. And if a warehouse developer comes calling, you can point to one of your neighbors and say, they have us covered in that regard. We don't have to do that here. So we have seen a lot of that happening. And so far, 37 of our 62 municipalities are now either in a multi-municipal plan, or we are sort of racing to get them in one. And those are also things that take time and effort and motivation. It usually takes 1 to 2 years to get that done, and sometimes longer. So we have more than half of the Lehigh Valley in those plans now. So the communities, they have not been sitting pat. They're very proactive, and they've been working hard at this.
So, Becky, why have you worked so hard to get these communities in these multi-municipal plans? Why is it so important?
Because it allows them to say, okay, well, this community is largely an agricultural community, and they would like to remain that way if that's their priority. That gets written in the plan. But their neighbor may have some development already, might be a historic borough, and they might want to have some redevelopment or reuse, or maybe even a little bit more growth. And so they can say, okay, well, our borough partner has a lot more housing, and so we now in our rural community don't need to accommodate more high density housing because we want to prioritize protection of the farmland. And it's the only way under Pennsylvania law that you cannot be required to zone for every conceivable use. And zoning basically means like what you can or can't do on a property, and then to some extent how that happens, like how much of the property can you build on, and, you know, so maximum coverage, lot coverage, that sort of thing. So that's the second step after they do the comprehensive plan, is once they're in a plan together, they can basically trade uses and say, okay, this makes sense for us. here, but it doesn't make sense for community B there. And then they can trade those back and forth. Otherwise, they have to have everything. And so what essentially that does is what Pennsylvania law does is it basically makes the Pennsylvania right to develop state. And so it puts communities that are trying to protect certain forests, farmlands, open spaces, it puts them in a very precarious position because if they're not in one of these plans, they have to allow them. And sometimes they have to allow forms of growth that don't make sense and that aren't sustainable. And so, you know, you can't put high density housing without having a sewer and water system. So if you're not in a multi-municipal plan and you're a rural community or even an ex-urban community, you're essentially saying, I'm inviting urban scale development into my town. And that we know is not an acceptable answer in many of our communities. Now, we have tons of communities that already have a lot of development of different forms and scales, and that's kind of what makes the Lehigh Valley attractive to some extent. There's a lot of variety, a lot of different place types. So, you know, you've got a whole bunch of different things to do and a whole bunch of different places to visit, and that's one of our strengths. And so where can you keep like forms of development together or complementary forms of development together and make sure that it's not going to result in, you know, huge increases in sewer and water bills, huge increases in traffic, closure of roads for extended periods of time because they have to be completely rebuilt and expanded. All of that costs taxpayers billions of dollars, billions. And that's just the public sector stuff. Then you start throwing on other forms of utilities like electric, broadband, things of that nature. That shows up in your bills, right? So more is always more. But you can't stop development. It's remember Pennsylvania legislature back in the 1960s adopted a philosophy of right to develop. And unless that law would change, that's what we have to work within. So as we try to manage growth responsibly, because again, you know, some growth is fine. It's how it happens and where it happens. That's the issue, right? And so if we don't have what we want enabled where we want it, we get bad development. And so all of these multi-municipal efforts are really the foundation to then build other legal structures that authorize or don't authorize things that a community would need or want.
Once these communities start working together in multi-municipal plans, they find other places. They develop relationship and they find other places where they share their motivations. Some of them buy materials together. Some of them actually share employees. Like they'll have one position that maybe has to be part-time in one place, but they can use it in another. It ends up being a benefit to them in other areas.
Yeah, once you start collaborating together, you find other ways that you can continue working together. It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, a good one that's happening right now is they're buying road salt, right? It's that time of year, and they get a better deal if they can buy road salt together than if each one of them has to buy road salt. A lot of communities will, like one community might have a certain type of excavation equipment to do kind of public works type activities, and then another community has a different piece of equipment, but they don't use that equipment all the time, but they need it when they need it. So they'll create mutual kind of aid agreements, essentially. I mean, that's often for emergency management services, but they'll create cooperative partnerships where, okay, you're not using this piece of equipment. Can we borrow it for this many days? And you can borrow ours when you need it. And that type of stuff, again, is incredibly important for reducing costs to everyone. And again, it's all about making sure that we have a great community to live in. And that means that it's affordable. And so a key piece of that is, you know, efficiency.
So what's the next frontier? Where is development heading?
Loaded question.
Are we built out yet
here? The developers will flock there. No, but that is partially it. Again, Christian and Mackenzie have been working hard on figuring out where we can predict development is going to go. We know that there are locations, and you can find them in Future LV, the regional plan. We have a general land use plan. It's a big map. And there's an area that has like a hatched line on it. And that's where we know development is likely to push into. There's sewer water infrastructure there. We call it the preservation buffer because really it's up to the municipal government to make the decision whether they want the development to push into that area or not. But that's where we know development is likely, most likely to go.
So you've been doing this a long time, Becky. What's your general impression about the changes Lehigh Valley has undergone over the past few decades?
I mean, there's been a lot of really great things. Like, look at the three cities. Mm-hmm. I mean, not so long ago, we were all talking about what we could do to, you know, save the city. And all three of them are completely different than they were 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. Massive reinvestment in the cities. And that is obviously going to continue. Some of our suburban communities have really started to build out. What I mean by that is there's a lot of infill. Parcels that, you know, you would drive by and you wouldn't really notice had some kind of, you know, small use on them. And now they're, you know, people are making bigger investments in those. And maybe it's changing from a place where they used to store like rock for landscaping. And now it's a mixed use development with apartments and a coffee shop. And so that's kind of really what's happened over the last decade. However, there's a part of that that's not positive, and I think we all understand that, or is a double-edged sword, right? The industrial market is the double-edged sword. It's been great for jobs. However, a number of our communities got caught flat-footed where they hadn't really planned. They had a lot of old type zoning, original type zoning that you would have seen in the 1960s or 70s that just said, okay, all the uses we don't know what to do with go here in general industrial, but they didn't evolve the ordinances to really reflect that, you know, modern industrial are these very large buildings, multiple things can happen inside of them, similar to multiple things happening inside like a commercial strip mall. That's often what you see inside industrial buildings today. And so, you know, we've had some externalities associated with that. And I think it's important to acknowledge that, but yet, we've also had some very positive things happen in the industrial sector as well. We've had some massive redevelopment. We all know some of the good things that have happened over on some of the old Bethlehem Steel lands, or we've seen industrial districts that have existed for a while, like out in Western Lehigh County at Route 100 and I-78. We've even seen when like the Kraft Foods plant was no longer used at that. That site's now been redeveloped and Keurig Dr. Pepper is manufacturing all kinds of drinks there. They're even making their own bottles there and moving things between buildings with robots. And we've kept that manufacturing district intact. And there's been some places where we've seen some development that's both good and bad. Like it makes sense where the Schrinn interchange was built. And that was a largely privately funded interchange by the Schrinn family off of Route 33 with some support from the county and from the state. But, you know, it makes sense to have some industrial there, yet the impacts on Tatami Borough from traffic and on Forks Township and other places adjacent have not been great. And so, you know, that to some extent made sense. And to another extent, there were externalities associated with that that are very difficult. So I think those are the types of things that we have to work through and be mindful of and ensure that we're getting in front of so those externalities can be avoided or mitigated where we have a new development, redevelopment, and reinvestment. So it's complicated, very complicated. It's parcel by parcel. And I always like to say, too, if it was easy, it would be solved by now, right? So, but you also can't say this is too difficult, so we're going to walk away from it. Like, that's irresponsible. And I think that's where, you know, the Planning Commission is never afraid of the difficult puzzle and really tries to stay in that space of fact-based optimism. And that's really where, you know, Christian and Kenzie's work in figuring out, you know, where those difficult places are and where we're about to see challenges and how can we work with the communities to get in front of those challenges before they become an externality is so important.
And one thing that's running through my head, and we don't have a whole lot of time left, but just to touch on it briefly, is school districts. You know, if you're talking about all this influx of housing and development, that's an area that's going to be greatly impacted, right?
It may be. Well, the truth is there's a lot of misinformation around housing. And we've already started doing some data work, and Kenzie's behind this, as well as Joey Doda and Jill Seitz in community planning, and Mary Grace, who is our Lehigh community fellow this year. But we are about to launch a whole housing supply and attainability strategy. But our population is aging, even with the influx of new people. You know, by 2050, the millennials will be eligible for AARP, right? So, I mean, we need to have realistic conversations about this. And the birth rate is low. And so a lot of people overreact when housing is being proposed, assuming that the, you know, the school district populations are going to double or quadruple, when in fact, sometimes there may be less than two handfuls of new students in a very large 200 unit development that go into the school district. Now, in prior decades, the 1970s, 1980s, you would have seen double that number of children going into the school district. Mm. Now, we know, though, that as development happens, more is more. and I know that our school districts are very mindful of that. It's one of the reasons why we hold biannual general assemblies, and we invite all of our local governments and the school districts. One of the interesting things about the Pennsylvania Municipalities Planning Code is it requires local governments to report how much development is occurring is proposed in a community monthly to the school district. And then the school districts use that to do facilities planning, predictive modeling on the number of students and the like. So I think what's very important is to understand that if we don't have more youth, we won't have workers for all the many, many, many types of jobs that we have. Children are not bad. And I think we need to come out of this mentality of it's a zero-sum game. In fact, it's worse than that. It's a negative outcome if we don't plan for our future generations.
Right, right. All right. Well, once again, we've run short here. We're out of time. We could keep talking about this, but thank you, Becky, Matt, and Christian, for your time this evening and coming on and talking about this. If you'd like to listen to this program again, please go to wdiy.org or the WDIY app or your favorite podcast platform. I'm your host, Margaret McConnell, and you are listening to WDIY 88.1.